The COB is brought to you by Pepperstone, trusted by traders in over 160 countries. From Barangaroo Studios, here's what you need to know about the day in business and finance.
Well, hello, hello. This is the COB. I'm Nadine Blaney. It's the 16th of April. Juliet Sally, what a day.
What a day indeed, Nadine. One of those days we have not seen, in fact, for over a year, at one point down around 2%. On the ASX 200, you can see there the CBO 200 finishing the session off by about 1.7%. So it was that dip around between 1 and 2, I guess, and again a little bit between 2 and 3, which really rattled investor sentiment. Slight turnaround, but still not a great day at all.
No, surely not. And the last of the day's trades are going through the S&P ASX 200 as we speak, so we will bring you the final figure from that market. But safe to say, it's just an absolute sea of red. We've probably overused in our career the whole bloodbath reference.
Yeah.
When it comes to days of really acute selling like this, I mean, there was a lot of volume moving through the market, and it was right across the Asian region again. Why? Well, because we've got a lot of concern really being exacerbated overnight when we got that retail sales read, you know, rate cuts. How can they cut?
How can they? And it was really interesting. I was speaking to Alex Pakoulis from Harper's Bernay earlier. He reckons that the Fed will hike, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
I just spoke to George Barbouris. He said possible but improbable about that. But seriously, the resilience of this economy in a country where people have these fixed 30-year rates, you know, they're not actually seeing the pain in the same way that mortgage holders here are.
No, and when you look at the employment market there, still going strong, they've got migrants coming as well. And I think it's worthwhile noting, just to round out the themes that dominated markets today, is that even China's quarterly GDP growth coming in better than expected and pretty solid wasn't enough to sort of, you know, save the market from itself, so to speak, when it comes to equities. At least. So here's just a tweet I came across from one of our buddies that we speak to, Chris Weston from Pepperstone.
Oh, was it Chris Weston?
I think this is, well, which one did they get for us? Let's bring it up on screen. Yeah, Chris Weston. Bloodbath. He says, sorry, a bit dramatic, but I guess it sells. We got you, Chris. So worst day since March 10th, 2023. And he's saying that value, you know, like when you're a value market, you get hit particularly hard.
Yeah, indeed. So as he talked about, the worst day since the 10th of March last year, the first good backdrop for the short sellers to operate in for a while. And so far, it's been a solid high-low trend day. Let's have a look at the sectors that we saw hit, because it was pretty much all of them. But kicking it off with the consumer discretionary, and this is also, we've got a bit of a spelling mistake there. But this is also interesting. Well, I suppose it's more the consumer staples. What's happening with the Senate inquiry into Woolies and Coles, and, you know, getting very argy-bargy there. Let's flip that over. We're missing an N in discretionary. We couldn't afford that today.
Nobody would have noticed.
BHP and Rio.
What a change from yesterday. I mean, when you think about just how quickly all the gains that we saw, you know, in Rio was up by more than that amount yesterday. We had metals flying. We had talk of Russian sanctions to the LME and the CME in terms of aluminium, copper, and the like, you know, really driving sentiment there. So yeah, not even Chinese growth, because it looks as if the stimulus, at least for the beginning of the year, did, you know, help stimulate some activity there, not enough to turn things around for this important sector here locally.
All right, the banks all hit hard, down by about 1.5% to 2% there. ANZ falling by 2%, and then just getting as well to some of the corporate stories, because I mentioned what's happening with Woolies and Coles and former, is he still the CEO?
Well, I think he is right now, but
until
outgoing.
September, right?
Yeah.
Threatened with prison time for contempt before the inquiry was suspended. Woolies shares down 0.7%.
Yeah, very touchy there. Dominating headlines, obviously. I like Chanticleer in the AFR saying the Senate cage match that saw Woolies CEO threatened with jail. IDT Australia, well, there is a beacon of light in and amongst all the bad news. Shares were up after it secured a contract worth about $3.5 million with a French pharmaceutical giant for the development of its novel mRNA-based vaccines.
All right, let's have a look as well at what was happening with McMahon, down by about 5%. They're set to buy the WA Engineering Group Decmil for $46 million, paying 30 cents a share in cash. This is interesting because Decmil traded around $13 and now it's, I think, 28 cents the last time I looked.
So there's an opportunistic buy, isn't it? And then this data center theme, and that's what I chose the stock of the day to be related to. But, you know, we saw NextDC raising $1 billion last week to really plow money into its infrastructure here in Australia. But Macquarie Technology, obviously a much smaller raise, but it will be sort of helping to form and fulfill, color in its ambitions in terms of data centers. But I think, Juliet, we've got to stick with markets. You know, what we're seeing out there, what does today mean? Like, let's get some perspective on it.
Indeed. Well, who better than our friend Martin Crabb from Shaw and Partners? Your take today. You would have been around the block enough to see many seas of red.
Yeah, absolutely. So how much of today was the retail sales number in the US, and how much of it's just this risk-off trade? The fat tail of the distribution is what we're worried about here. We're worried about this situation in the Middle East deteriorating, price of oil going higher, on top of, you know, sticky inflation in the States. And it's a throwback to the 1970s when we had two oil crises within 4 or 5 years of each other, and inflation hadn't been tamed the first time around. We had a second bout of oil inflation on the Iran-Iraq war and the Iranian Revolution, and it set off, you know, the highest interest rates in history, thanks to Paul Volcker, because that was the only way they could kill inflation, was to kill the economy. So I'm not saying we're going back into that. There is just a historical parallel. If you don't get inflation down, you're susceptible to another energy price shock, and what's happening in the Middle East could quickly turn into that. So we need to start pricing this into markets, and it's not priced at the moment.
Right? Yeah, I can't believe we did our whole preamble without really talking about the Middle East, because of course everybody's on tenterhooks. Markets are on tenterhooks. Yesterday, it seemed as if oil was reacting fairly calmly, down below $90 for Brent. And so that was, but what do you see, if history is a guide, when you think about this potential oil crisis and what it, may actually mean?
Yeah. Look, it's really difficult to draw that parallel because the world's a completely different place than it was in the 1970s, for example. But it's just this kind of concern about, do we go back to 2022 when we had a runaway inflation, we had geopolitical risk adding to the energy price inflation, and we had this sell-off in the long-term bond rate on the back of it. And there was almost no place to hide in 2022. The global market was down 25%. The bond market was down 25%. It was really only energy and stocks that had pricing power that were the place to hide. Now, I think you've got to tilt portfolios back that way again. You've got to start thinking, am I overweight in energy? It's about 6% of the ASX. It's less than the global market. But we've got some world-class energy stocks in our market, so we're a little bit luckier. And then we've also got some companies with great pricing power that can do well in an inflationary environment. They've either got businesses that are really strong that they can pass on higher costs, or they've got revenue that's linked to it. So I think Transurban, APA, things like that. So in terms of portfolio construction, you have to start increasing the chances of this scenario getting worse. You hope it doesn't, but you've got to manage though it does. And you've got to start going back to your portfolio in 2022, and it's got gold and oil and stocks with pricing power, and they're the ones that did well today, and they're the ones that'll do well going forward.
And you're getting those at the expense of those that are interest rate sensitive, you know, those that were growth names. But what about consumer related stocks? Because you put the two together, we still have a relatively strong consumer, at least some cohorts, as opposed to others that are suffering.
Yeah, and it's really once you get into the retail weeds, it gets really, really tricky because you've got all this other stuff going on, like travel and immigration, and those things are absolutely flying. So that and that demographically is where all the money is, right? The people taking $150 billion out of super every year and, getting all that interest on their deposits, they're spending money. Yep. And so the travel numbers look fantastic. Global labour mobility is improving, so that's really positive. But then you get into the cyclical side, and I think you were talking earlier about auto loan delinquencies.
Yes, so I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, people can't afford to pay for the car, so how are they going to get around? How are they going to get jobs? So there's this kind of real bifurcated economy where the haves and the have-nots. So at an aggregate level, the economy is holding up really well. Retail sales are fantastic in the US, But there's a lot of people really, really struggling with the cost of living. So it really does, you can't use a shotgun, you got to use a rifle when it comes to retail. You got to focus on those areas of the economy that are holding up well, and travel's a really obvious one.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, it was really interesting being locked down in 2020 when IATA said the travel recovery will be 2024. That seemed so far away, but here we are.
Yeah.
You've been saying this for a while.
Yeah.
The arrival and departure data that we got through, what does that kind of tell us about the bullish trend here?
Yeah, it's just reconfirming that we're going back to the pre-COVID level. In fact, we're on a trajectory to go back above the pre-COVID level. So just looking at temporary student visas, 12-month rolling average, we're almost back up to that high of 800,000-850,000 a year, which we had back in 2018-2019. And the composition is really interesting because China's not making up nearly as much as that market because Chinese students aren't traveling as much. But the other one is the temporary work visa. You can see that that's been held at about 200,000 for a long period of time. It's now back up. If we look at all short-term visitors arrival, so this is people coming on holidays, we're still about 1.5 million away from where we were pre-COVID. So you just kind of feel that, you know, again, Sydney's a global city, so you just have to go down to the rocks and see how many tourists are coming back, but that's on its way back too. So again, we can have this situation where, you know, geopolitical risk is rising. Everyone's worried about inflation. Bond yields are selling off. It's all horrible. But then you look at that and go, I want to be in the travel business, or I want to be in the student business, or I want to be in the temporary worker business, because those areas of the economy are still going to continue to grow no matter what happens in the Middle East.
Can I just quickly ask a follow-up in terms of, I mean, obviously the obvious ones might be Flight Centre, Qantas, Webjet. What about the business travel demand too? Like just the one-day business trips that seem to be happening, people going from Sydney to Perth, which, you know, wasn't happening because people were doing Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
Does that look good for corporate travel and the like?
Yeah, I mean, you can buy the agents or you buy the airline. I mean, the thing is, we've got this airline that's almost a monopoly in Australia and it's trading on 6x earnings. And look, you know, airlines, I get it, people don't think they're fantastic investments, but I mean, our view is, yes, you can buy the travel agent and try and pick the eyes out. Is it Webjet for the accommodation? Is it corporate travel for the corporate? Is it Serko in New Zealand, which has a lot of corporate? Or do you just go and buy the airline? For us, it's like, just go and buy the airline, you know?
Yeah, I dare say I'll name drop that I was speaking with Philip Pepe from Shawn Partners, and he called it a buy today on the call because in his view as well, a lot of that bad news is priced in. Mm. I will tease Mark Moreland, who was also a guest, because he did not rate Qantas a buy or anywhere near it, but he was joining us from the States. What airline did he fly?
Qantas.
And what did he pay for? Premium.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's leave that there because I would like to talk to you about the commodities complex. Mm. Now, last time you were here, we were talking about copper.
Yeah.
Since then, we've had a lot of movement in the markets. We've had the China data today.
Yeah.
Whereas the prospect of higher for longer rates usually are a headwind, I should say, for base metal prices.
Yeah.
Is anything different this time?
I suppose since I came on the show last time, we've had these sanctions on Russia that have, you know, been ratcheted up a notch. Just when we all thought we didn't have enough sanctions on Russia, we're now sanctioning their metals as well. And most of the LME stuff's coming out of Russia. So that's just tightened the markets up even further. So, yeah, I mean, how long will it take the geopolitical risk to start impacting growth? It'll impact the bond market, will impact the oil price, but when will it start impacting growth? Not for a while, I'd imagine. I mean, the Chinese economy, as you said earlier, grew at a faster rate than people thought. The US economy is in rude health. Most global economies, according to the composite leading indicators, are improving. So metals demand's improving. And copper's particularly acute because it goes into everything, whether it's EVs or the electrification, data centers, all these things, they all need copper. So I think it's kind of hard to see a case where all of a sudden demand for copper is going to fall off a cliff and all this new supply is coming on.
Mm.
So, you know, we've got Rio's quarterly yesterday, got BHP's quarterly aftermarket today. They would love to have more copper production. Mm. It's just almost impossible to ramp it up. Mm. And then you've got, you know, strikes and industrial action in Latin America as well. So the setup for copper could not be much more positive than it is, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, and we did have some of the brokers out last week, re-rating Citi comes to mind in terms of the price going forward. They actually say it's a secular bull market for the second time this century.
That, don't you?
I can't say that word.
Secular. Bull market.
Okay. All right. So we've got sort of your worldview across a lot of different sectors on a day like today, because I'm thinking of our viewers.
Yeah.
You know, many of them are watching with, you know, a real sense of trepidation.
Mm.
They've lost money today, on paper at least.
Yeah.
So what do you do in times like this, Martin, when, you know, we've got a lot of risks that won't be resolved anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, this is just, I suppose, probably the start of a continuation of some sort of repricing of geopolitical risk, which is, we don't know how it plays out. It's obviously a 2% move in a day is quite a significant position. The Chinese market was down almost 3% when I came down. So, you know, this will take days, weeks to play out. It's a buying opportunity longer term because you kind of look at the macro setup is positive, it's getting better. But you just need to sort of work this through. I think if people are overextended in the market, this sort of thing just gives you a little bit of a warning sign that maybe things aren't all fantastic all the time. But for most investors, these sort of pullbacks are just another opportunity to put some money to work. There will be, you know, there will be some babies that get thrown out with the bathwater, if I can use that term. There'll be some stocks that shouldn't be sold off that do get sold off. And, you know, as I said, for longer term investors, you know, use pullbacks in the market as an opportunity to add to your portfolio.
Alert but not alarmed, if we can use
one
more. All right, Martin, always a pleasure. Martin Crabb from
Thanks
Shore and
very
Partners.
Much.
All right, let's have a look at the leaders and laggards in a day when there were plenty more laggards than leaders.
And
stock of the day, actually.
Well, stock of the day. Well, then, okay, this is a good one because this is Southern Cross Electrical Engineering. And I was referencing copper, referencing data centers. Well, who's going to be putting all of this together, right? There's going to be these businesses that are essentially the services, you know, the picks and shovels of these thematics. And so I spoke with Philip Pepe from Shawn Partners and Mark Moreland from Team Invest about Southern Cross Engineering because it just sort of secured some more data center work today.
Like the space the company has been delivering, you know, transitioning from a company predominantly servicing the mining sector in WA, very convincingly moved to the East Coast market. So I suspect it'll win more fans today compared to even a month ago. So yeah, I'd call it a buy. I think there'll be some upgrades post today's trading update.
We're showing it returning 18% a year at the current price, based on maintaining its growth rate going forward, which I think is a reasonable thing. Margin of safety is about 6%. If I was going to look at this, I'd probably want 10% on a margin of safety, and that puts it at their share price at 94 cents. It's current. Yeah, but it's quite a good company, and it's got a good history, and I think it's in a good space.
So can we call it a buy from you today?
If you're going to twist my arm, yes.
Yeah.
And now we get to the leaders and laggards.
Yeah, I didn't think it was too bad to twist his arm because, of course, it goes through the filter of the investment committee. So double buy for Southern Cross and Electrical Engineering. Let's see if it's made the list. No.
Lifestyle Communities has, as has BWP Trust, Charter Hall. I found that really interesting. It was flashing green on my iris all day for no apparent reason, I don't think. Virgin Money and Atlas Arteria also there. But look, you know, the best gain was less than 2%. It was certainly a day of losers today.
Yeah, and those names don't normally make it onto the list either, I dare say. And Lifestyle Communities is actually one of the most shorted stocks on the market. So there you go. Star Entertainment, just more bad news coming from that inquiry that's being held currently, down by a further 12%. And then you've got some of these, you know, these miners up there. And then PolyNovo, I didn't see any news associated with that. Although, you know, on a day like today, it's a growth stock. It's been priced for perfection, some might say. So perhaps a little bit of profit taking there.
Indeed. All right, let's have a look at the small end of town. E&P Financial, oh, nice 10% gain there. Berkeley Energia, Helios Energy, is it Reese or Recce?
It's Recce Pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
Reese is the plumbing one.
That's right. Recce Pharmaceutical and Encounter Resources.
Okay, and the laggards, I dare say we'll see some big drops here, yeah. Piedmont Lithium. Findi, it was out with an announcement yesterday about white labeling ATMs in India, but down by 13% today. And again, you know, in this environment, it's pretty tough for any of these companies that are so-called growth companies or that are loss-making, you know, or, you know, just burning through cash. So I'm not, you know, casting any aspersions, but there you go. That's the setup.
All right. And of course, looking tonight, housing starts, industrial production. But we're going to hear from Fed Chair Powell, also UK unemployment data. I was talking to Matt, is it Richardson, from OFX. I think he mentioned we might hear from Mark Carney today as well. But we'll triple check that. Canada CPI coming through as well.
And we also hear from the Canadian Central Bank Governor Tiff Macklin as well today. So that'll be interesting. And Also, when you think about Fed speakers, you know, we've got Fed Chair Powell. I wasn't aware of that, but that'll be a good one.
Yeah.
And then we also have, I think it's Daly that's out. Yeah, the FOMC's Daly will be speaking. Industrial production, which is expected to be broadly flat, and March's housing starts, Westpac says, indicate that borrowing costs do remain a headwind for builders. So some of that survey expectations in the Eurozone, I think, will be pretty interesting
and
as well.
And also worth noting, because we are in the midst of earnings, Bank of America, BNY Mellon, Johnson & Johnson, Morgan Stanley, United Airlines, and United Health Group. All right, let's have a look at what we can see tomorrow. Kiwi inflation data after the RBNZ left rates on hold, Japan trade balance, Bank of Queensland coming through with earnings, quarterly updates as well from Evolution Mining and
Viva Energy.
Yes.
It'll look good. And Washington H. Soul Pats is trading ex-dividend. So we know that tonight is a night that could potentially, you know, at the drop of a hat, be dominated by developments that are coming out of the Middle East. So, you know, market participants will be very on edge for that. Bit of selling and the S&P ASX 200 into the close, it looks like, will be closing down. So that's a SIBO, don't forget, but we'll be closing down for the ASX, it looks like
1.8%, 140 points, 7,612, a new 20-day low, and down 2.7% over the last 5 days, which you would imagine is really most of that happened today. Anyway, tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it, as Anna Green Gables used to say.
Are you an Anna Green Gables fan?
I love Anna Green Gables.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, that brings back such good memories.
Actually, I don't even think it was her. I think it was like her older mentor, the lady with the...
The bun?
The bun.
Yeah. Mrs.
Not Marilla, but the other one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, a story for another day. We will be back tomorrow, hopefully, with no mistakes in it.
See you then.
The COB is brought to you by Pepperstone, trusted by traders in over 160 countries.